Chapter 36. Once out of the relatively clear spaces of the Navy camp, they drove along narrow dirt tracks through a landscape crowded with incomprehensible machinery. Cutler pointed to a wooden post with a red-painted top and a number etched into its side.
"You can see we're trying to impose some organization on this place,"
Roberta said. "To a large extent, the whole facility is self-organizing. The thinker itself has, or at least is incrementally developing, a knowledge of its own necessary layout."
"All of which wordy bullshit is no use to your average truck driver from Detroit trying to find his drop point. So we've sent up a couple of Navy twains to map and number the emerging zones, according to a system of our own,"
Roberta said dryly. "Painting all those little signposts does keep a lot of people in uniform gainfully occupied."
"Yeah," Cutler said entirely without irony. "That's another advantage."
They entered what Roberta called a manufacturing zone. The cart rolled to a halt outside a kind of factory, a long, low building of aluminium walls and big glass ceiling panels. As she walked in, crossing a floor of hastily laid concrete, Maggie saw what looked like assembly lines and some equipment she recognized, angular construction robots that she'd expect to see in a Twain shipyard, automated forklift trucks shifting loads to and fro, and a big overhead frame from which heavy chains dangled. More robots than people, she figured, but the people she could see were hard at work. What they were working on was the mystery. Cutler said,
"I picked this site to show you because it has a cast of characters of a representative type, as you'll see."
"Including my young friends from the Gap." Roberta abruptly took the lead, striding across the floor to a small workshop area, curtained off, floor to ceiling, by dust-excluding translucent sheets. At their approach, a couple of workers emerged, a man and a woman, both looking no older than 30 to Maggie, and wearing blue coveralls with Gap Space logos at the breast. The woman was holding a slab of some glass-like substance. The man spoke.
"Good to see you, Professor Golding."
He indicated himself and his co-worker.
"Dev Bilaniuk, Lee Malone, both GapSpace employees and shareholders."
When Maggie and Cutler were introduced, the workers didn't seem fazed by their high ranks or military uniforms, or indeed particularly interested, Maggie thought. Lee said,
"We were told you would want to see what we're working on. This is a sample."
She held up the slab of material.
"Actually, this item failed its integration tests, so it's safe to remove it from the sterile area. We'll break it up for components and reuse them later."
Maggie was allowed to hold the assembly. It was indeed glass-like, with a complex internal structure dimly glimpsed, like some fantastically complicated quartz crystal. And yet it was evidently artificial, for she saw subcomponents within, what looked to her like silicon chips, threads of wire or cable, and tiny light sources that glowed in constellations, green and gold.
"It's like a whole world in there," she said.
Lee smiled.
"Beautiful, isn't it?
It wouldn't be meaningful to say that we made this. It's more a question of self-assembly. Well, it's that way for all the thinker's components, save the simplest structural pieces." Dev said,
"We were assigned to this work because of our technical experience with Gap Space. Even using the Gap, the space program depends a lot on miniaturization. Actually, we two got involved in the first place because we were working on the in-gap RT that detected the invitation."
Maggie asked warily,
"RT? Radio telescope," Roberta murmured.
"Tell her what she's looking at," Cutler snapped.
"It's one of the smarter sub-modules," Dev said. "I mean, most of the components seem to be smart to some extent, and the whole assembly, when completed, well, we haven't got a handle on how smart that will be yet. What you have there is an approximation to a kind of computronium."
That left Maggie flailing again.
"A what now?"
Roberta smiled. "A human name for an alien technology." Lee said,
"A substance where every grain, even every molecule, every atom, is devoted to information processing. This is probably some way short of the ultimate realization, but we can recognize computing systems on a variety of scales, all the way from the mechanical, see those little levers, down through the electronic, transistors and such, through chemical and nano, and we think, quantum. Dev said,
But we think the real beef is in the material structure itself. It's a kind of diamond, engineered carbon, just as it looks, more advanced as a material even than space elevator thread.
Roberta said, And an innovation which alone is revolutionizing human industries.
Cutler rubbed his chin.
Makes you think about the scale of what's going on here, doesn't it? You have rivers of twains in the sky, a steady flow of raw materials across the long earth, and you have this in the palm of your hand, with a computer in every damn molecule.
Maggie said, How smart exactly?
Dev said, Well, we estimate the data store at 10 to 22 power bits per gram.
At Maggie's blank expression, he said,
That's, 10 billion trillion bits.
Roberta said, By comparison, a human brain, and a next one come to that, stores around 100 trillion bits, smaller by a factor of 100 million. In fact, the number he quoted is 10 times more than mankind's estimated current global data store.
Cutler snorted, That doesn't sound so much.
Maggie said, But he said, per gram. She hefted the block. What does this mass? About a kilogram? And it can store 10 times as much as all humanity's knowledge. The whole of the Library of Congress, per gram. She glanced around at the facility. This is overwhelming. Damn it, Ed. You should have sent me some kind of brief.
Would you have believed it? Come meet a few more of our citizen volunteers.
Carly Merrick.
Joe Margolis.
We're from the Beanstalk facility at Miami West 17.
These were two bright, nervous 20-year-olds who were applying experience of massive engineering gained from a space elevator construction project to one of the larger components. What they were building was a glistening, seamless structure of some pale, smooth substance with a flaring base leading up to a complicated peak, where something like a ball joint connected the lower entity to a flaring shield. Maggie thought it looked like the knee joint of some Dali-esque surreal monster.
We've no idea what it's for, or even if it's finished yet, Carly said.
But we just love working on it, said Joe. Some of the pieces are made by conventional manufacture. We do some iron smelting here. There's steel work, but most of the metal components are built of aluminum that's flown in by twain from stepwise extraction operations. There's some stuff built of fancier materials like carbon composites, and then there's this. If I'm honest, we don't quite know what it's made of. The chemists could tell you. It kind of grew in a big vat, layer by layer.
Carly said nervously, We have to look it over, check tolerances. Keep an eye on the flow of materials into the vat, the temperature.
We just love being here, General, Joe blurted out.
Admiral, Maggie corrected her automatically.
I mean, there was just no work at home, not since they mothballed the beanstalk.
And Maggie, who had commanded some peacekeeping missions at troubled, half-derelict industrial sites in the overdeveloped, underused communities of the Low Earths, sympathized completely. But as they moved on, Cutler grumbled,
So much for a message from the stars. Sometimes it's like a damn welfare scheme. We've even got the humble here, just like those low-earth industrial wastelands.
The humble?
Think of a labor union run by sanctimonious next. You'll see soon enough, and you'll have to find a way to deal with them. And good luck with that,
Cutler said blackly. The factory tour continued. Maggie's last encounter was surprisingly with a little kid with a matter printer. He was no older than 10, 11. He just sat there feeding scrap into the machine's hopper, and out the other side came objects rather like heavy bolts, a couple of inches long, with broad heads but lacking any thread that Maggie could see. He'd been doing this for a while, evidently. There was a box of the bolts beside him, half filled. A nun sat with him, reading a novel on a tablet.
She smiled and introduced herself as Sister Colleen. The boy was called Jan Roderick. They were from a children's home in Madison West 5.
Not just any home, Cutler murmured to Maggie. The same home that produced the great Joshua Valiente. You'd think one would be enough.
Maggie knew all about Joshua Valiente and the home. She bent down.
You made all these?
The matter printer did, Jan said simply.
Well, yeah.
But I programmed it. I go around collecting waste material at the end of the shifts, and I recycle it into things like this.
All very efficient, Roberta said approvingly.
Maggie asked, Do you know what these things are for?
No, but nobody knows what any of this is for. Not yet. They must be good for something, or they wouldn't want them, would they?
I guess not. Maggie studied Jan, and she thought of the couple from the Gap, the girls from the space elevator, their shining enthusiasm. This project was certainly capturing imaginations, it seemed, from kids' homes in the low Earths all the way to space workers.
Why are you doing this, Jan? What's the appeal?
Jan looked at her as if he didn't understand the question.
There was an invitation from the sky. It said, Join us. And then there were the messages from the next people, and I figured them out for myself. The viral stories, the number clues that led to this world, apple pie.
That's true, said Sister Colleen ruefully.
And that's why I'm making these.
Another bolt was finished. He bent over, picked it out of the printer's hopper, stowed it in the box with the rest, and pressed the printer's restart button. He grinned a gappy grin up at Maggie.
Join us. That's what it said. I'm helping.
Cutler tapped Maggie on the shoulder.
First, join me. I got a couple more items to show you before your coffee break.